thanks, Bob, for the introduction and for coming. I want to thank the minister, especially for coming here, and for everyone else and everyone who helped to organize this. Super, and to the New America Foundation also for having this event here at their place. I'll do a brief run-through of some of the characteristics of the recovery, and then I want to talk a little bit about the significance of it, because I think it has implications beyond Argentina. So let me start with that. First, just growth. This is just the growth of the economy in real terms of GDP. Since the first quarter of 2002, which is when it began recovering. And I have to say two things about this first off. First of all, it's a lot of growth, as Bob mentioned, almost the Chinese rates of growth, 47% over this time. And when I'm in Washington, I always have to say something about the importance of growth, because this is one of our big issues. The media doesn't really talk much about the growth failure in Latin America, the long-term failure over the last 25 years. It's been the worst long-term growth experience that Latin America has had in over a century. So this kind of growth is quite outstanding, and it's very important, because that is the basis of increasing people's living standards. It's the basis of reducing poverty, as we'll see in a minute, just not only for Argentina, but in general. This huge growth slowdown has had enormous consequences prior to this, not only the crash in Argentina, but the long-term failure. You know, if Brazil and Mexico had simply continued to grow at the rates that they grew prior to 1980, they would have the living standards of Europe right now, and the whole continent would look quite different. So I am, of course, hoping that this will, this is more than a single country incident, but in fact, it has implications for the rest of the region. And perhaps there will be a return to more normal rates of growth that developing countries used to have in this region in the past and have had in other parts of the world. Second, of course, employment has grown quite a bit. Of course, during this recovery, this is in urban areas, more than 2.3 million jobs created. Unemployment and underemployment on this one, unemployment has fallen from a peak of 20.4% in the in 2003, in the first quarter, down to 8.7% at the end of last year. The poverty rate has also declined from a peak of 54% in 2003 to 26.9%. Percent for the last second half of last year. And that is, again, this is the impact of this kind of growth, and it's obviously some of it is rebound. And that's something people don't, you know, I still hear people in this town say, well, you know, Argentina is a rebound. No, that's 5 years now, okay? You could say that for the first 2 years, first 3 years, but 5 years of this kind of growth is worth looking at. It isn't just a rebound from the recession. The very deep recession that they had anymore. So overall, I think about over 9 million people nationwide probably pulled across the poverty line in a country of 36 million during these last 5 years. The last thing, of course, that people raise questions about the sustainability of this growth, and I think because obviously you had rapid growth, you know, during the experiment between 91 and 98, you had high growth, but it was very much unsustainable. And people know here the convertibility system was not sustainable, the currency was overvalued, and there were terrible imbalances in the economy that led to the collapse. At the end of 2001. Now, what do you, people have been saying this about this recovery from the beginning. As a matter of fact, 1 year into the recovery, the IMF Director of Research said that this recovery was just a brief hiatus in Argentina's long fall. So they turned out to be wrong, and we actually have a paper here, which I think is in your packet, or you got it, about the IMF projections for this recovery. They were way off by, you know, very large amounts in these, since 2003, really since the recovery began. And, of course, they were off completely in the other direction during the recession, where they kept projecting that the economy was going to, recovery was kind of just around the corner. And if you want more details of that, you can look at that. So the question is, well, what about this recovery? Is it is this sustainable, or is this like the previous one? Well, you can see, you know, the overall balance of the public sector is positive, a surplus of 1.8% of GDP, which is significant. The current account surplus is sizable as well, 3.7% of GDP. So you don't have you know, any big problems in the balance of payments like you had during the previous growth period. And international reserves have been growing. This is the end of 2006. I think they're higher now. This is $32 billion. So overall, just looking at the fundamentals, it doesn't look like there's anything really threatening the recovery. The one point that I think has been an issue, there's been an issue made, is inflation. And you can see it's this is year over year. I think in the last one is March 2007. It's 9.2% year over year for March. These figures, you know, move around month to month. Figures don't mean that much. But the peak was in 2005, December 2005, at 12.3%. So inflation, you know, might be higher than people would like, but it is not. There's no real evidence that it's going to get out of control or is heading in that kind of a direction. So obviously you would expect, with this kind of rapid growth, you do expect higher inflation. And that's one of the big issues, you know, which would you rather have, this kind of growth, 10% annual growth, and, you know, or 8.9% annual growth in the case of for the last 5 years, or would you rather have that and 10% inflation, or you know, a much lower rate of growth, 2% of growth maybe, and very low inflation? For most people, it's much better to have the growth. This is what creates the jobs. This is what increases it. It's your real income that really matters. And I think this is one of the big policy mistakes of the last 25 years. You've had too many generals in Latin America fighting the last war, which was really over inflation. And you can see the spike, of course, in inflation after the devaluation. This was the great fear, and why so many people supported the convertibility system, even after it was pretty much doomed, and obviously doomed, and the fund continued to loan money to support it. I think the argument at that time was that you would get some kind of either hyperinflation, they said hyperinflation, or extremely high inflation. And you did have, you know, a spike for a relatively brief period of time, but as you can see, it came back and down. Now, what are the main implications of this? First, I think the policy does really matter, and one of the policies I think that was key to this recovery was the government's targeting of a stable and competitive real exchange rate. I think this was very important, the recovery. And there's a good paper on that, which we also released jointly this week by Roberto Franco and Martin Repetti, which you also can get, which goes into this in quite some detail. I won't go into that much detail, but it was very important, and it's to maintain the stability and the growth, the stability of this recovery and the growth that you had. Because, you know, if you just target inflation, for example, and you leave the exchange rate to whatever it is determined by capital inflows and outflows, you can have quite a bit of volatility. You can have the economy could have gone back into recession at any time. And it was very important to be able to have that policy, which is an unorthodox policy. It's not a lot of economists, including the fund, say that, you know, They don't say so much you have fixed exchange rates anymore because that failed, but the idea was you either fix your exchange rate or you let it float. And this intermediate position of and using the central bank to target the exchange rate as well as the inflation, I mean also being concerned about inflation but targeting a stable and competitive real exchange rate is an unorthodox policy, and it seems to have worked very well. So I think that has implications, not that all countries can be able to do this. It depends on the sizes, quantities of the capital outflows. The government also used capital controls at various times in order to maintain this policy. Again, a heterodox policy, but one that was necessary to the government. The government used price controls as well. Again, another policy that's frowned upon by many economists, but it turned out to be, so far, effective in not having to sacrifice the growth of this economy and the recovery in order to bring down inflation by slowing the economy or by allowing the exchange rate to appreciate, which has happened in other countries, and slowing the economy in that way. So these are pretty important lessons, I think. Again, they don't necessarily extend to other countries. But, you know, to me, the most phenomenal thing of all, too, if you think about it, I mean, the country went through this terrible recession, which the majority of people into poverty, collapse at the end of 2001, the default on the debt, the biggest default ever, sovereign debt default. And then without any help at all, because the IMF actually opposed most of the policies that the government has used. So they had to do it without any help. And in fact, they did this, they accomplished the recovery with a net drain in 2002. There was a net outflow to the international financial institutions, mostly IMF, of $4 billion, or 4% of the country's GDP, a big net outflow. So no help, and worse than no help. And they still recovered. This was, I think, this played a role in changing the world as well, because in the last 10 years, there's been basically a collapse of the fund's power in influence in middle-income countries. And of course, that means also the U.S. Treasury Department's power, because they're the main actor and have a veto power over most IMF decisions. And I think this was part of it. The first part, of course, was the Asian countries self-insuring by building up reserves. But I think this was the second part of that process. And I think it has other implications. You know, look at the history of the 1980s, for example, the lost decade. And how you talk to people who supported the policies that were implemented during that period, what are usually called neoliberal policies in Latin America, and they say, well, the 80s was entirely a result, and some people will go even farther, all the way into the slow growth in the 90s, and say this was a result of the overborrowing during the 70s. Well, there's no doubt that Latin America overborrowed, but here's a case where a country, a series of governments overborrowed, I think as much as anyone, $100 billion. And how long did they have to suffer stagnation after the default? It was actually 3 months, okay? 3 months. It was a severe drop, but it was only 3 months, not 10 years, not 12 years, not 20 years. And then they began a rapid and continuous, well, it didn't start out that rapid, but it became a very rapid growth process that is still going. So if I look back at the 80s, you know, from this, after this experience, I might be tempted to say, well, maybe the problem in the 80s was they didn't write off enough of that debt. I've never recommended default to anyone. I've never defaulted on any of my loans. But Argentina had no choice. So if you're going to have a default, better to do it right and write off enough of the debt, clear enough off the books, restructure enough so that the economy can grow again. Why subject your economy to 10 or 20 years of stagnation for the sake of international financial markets? And that turned out to be a very important decision, a decision that the government withstood enormous pressure in order to take and carry out that decision. And I think it turned out to be very important. Okay, why don't I leave it there and let the minister speak next. Thank you.